Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the PPSAI Working Group call on the 3rd of June, 2014. On the call today, we have Graham Bunton, Holly Raich, Osvaldo Nuova, Val Sherman, Steve Medalist, Sarah Wild, Laura Jadid, McKaylee Nyland, Justin Macy, Darcy Southwell, Don Moody, Chris Pelling, Todd Williams, Frank McKellick, Kathy Kleiman, Don Blumenthal, James Bladell, Susan Prosser, Luke Sofer, Tim Ruiz, and Christian Dawson. We have apologies from Karen Malina-Teruvel, Paul McGrady, Tobias Sattler, and Joe Catapano. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Amy Bivens, and myself, Terry Agnew. Just joining us right now is also Christina Rosette. I would also like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Don.
Thanks. I'm having a good time with the jazz discussion in the chat. I hate to switch to business. I'm getting a lot of intermittent audio. I'm in a high slot. May just be me. But I'll get started. First thing, in case people have not seen it, we have been put on the ICANN schedule for 10 o'clock on the Wednesday of these meetings. That's later than we had originally hoped for, and later than our formal meeting and then our informal one before that. But it was to accommodate a conflict with expert working group session. And somebody decided that rather than them really wanting to come to see us, we might want to go see them. So we were pushed back. Start thinking, if you would, about how we should approach the meeting. We'll take that up at a later phone call. To be honest, I think it may depend on the progress we make, both with our template process, but also if we decide to revisit, I'm sorry, I've got to stop reading the chat, I'm sorry. If we do have time to revisit the prior threshold wording that we're still working with, at least one person, maybe some others are still working on offline. Now please keep your SOIs up to date. Somebody suggested that I should say that every week, although I'm sure it's going to be you and me. With that, McKaylee?
McKaylee speaking for the record. Don, apparently, now Marika can correct me, but apparently you're meant to ask us at the opening of every single meeting if there are any changes to people's conflict of interest or statements of interest. Marika can probably provide the exact wording on the policy, even though it may drive us all nuts doing it, but I think you're meant to do it every time.
Marika's not on the call, but and it wasn't from her, but I got similar wording, although I guess I didn't mention state of interest. Keep it updated, and also, note any changes in conflicts. And I guess, according to James here, I won't be alone in my nagging if anybody's on both groups. At this point, I'd like to just call on Kathy, or not call on Kathy and James, but I think we should discuss the next steps in terms of the transfer issues. Some of them, I think, have some relevance to maybe the whole issue of responsiveness that's part of the contactability and responsiveness issue in the D question. So we really haven't focused on that. So I'd like to just ask for thoughts on, in general, if you had any reactions to the discussion last week, but also how we might adapt it to the immediate question. James?
Hi, Don. Thanks. James speaking for the record. So just as far as the work and the discussions that Kathy and I had in our rough outline of findings that we presented last week, I think that it tees up a few questions for the group going forward. First off, I think that there are a couple of items that we can simply, and I don't mean to oversimplify them, but we can essentially say that, look, there are some communications that are either coming from ICANN or they're coming from the registrar that the privacy proxy service must relay. And that when we develop these relay procedures, that there are some that simply cannot be opted out by the privacy service customer. That said, I think that we also need to recognize the potential for registrars and third parties to abuse that and to call everything, including marketing and other unsolicited communications, as you know, somehow ICANN critical. And I think that we need to make some clear boundaries on what is and what is not considered an ICANN critical communication. So I think that that takes care of quite a bit of what we've addressed, particularly in item number one with regard to WDRP and then also the ERRP notification. I think that there's going to be more work involved when we talk about transfers, and I think that we're probably going to have to convene a sub-team, not only for folks on this call that are interested, but folks who have, who are intimately familiar with the weirdness that involves the inter-registrar transfers, and there's several of us here. There's a lot of overlap of membership with some of those transfer working groups, so folks may want to jump in on that as well. And then the third one, I think, essentially we discovered that, you know, as far as we can tell, there really is not a huge concern there as long as the registrar is on the 2013 RAA, that the privacy proxy customer data is being escrowed in an encrypted deposit, and therefore registrar failure does not put those domain names at risk. So I think, you know, just in general, that's my takeaway from those three. Kathy may, I don't mean to presume to speak for her in all of these situations, that she may have something to add, or maybe even some points of disagreement with what I was saying. But in general, that's, I think, where we landed with some of these. Thank you.
Great. I appreciate that. I mean, do you see? Oh, I'm sorry, Kathy.
Hi. I just wanted to share, I have no disagreement with what James said whatsoever. I appreciate him taking the lead. And the idea here is fairly narrow. We were just trying to close up as much as we could in a narrow way, but we were just a sub-team to kind of outline the issues. And so what he said about number one and number three, we think we can handle easily and probably non-controversially. It's number two. And even number two, we think, can be defined very narrowly as a narrow sub-team going out to kind of narrowly address one or two categories of our chart of four categories. So the private to non-private and the private to private transfers of domain names. And we're thinking with you know, some concerted work and effort by people who are really expert in it. This, too, is not, it's not a broad mandate. We're not trying to throw anything really open. We're just trying to kind of plug holes that we were able to spot, that as a working group we spotted, and then as a sub-team we defined. So we're hoping this is fairly narrow and focused. Thanks, Don.
Take the floor for a second and get to Steve. I guess, no, I see that it was both not, was focused and not necessarily, and not recommendations, but I'm just curious what lessons we can take for the, if any, for the specific question that we're looking at now concerning responsiveness. Maybe there aren't, but I wanted to, it seems to me to at least be a subtext of some of the discussion. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. Thanks again, James, and and Kathy for this this list, which is very helpful to me. I guess I have two questions. First, in the first group, presumably when we get to Relay, we'll be talking about this issue within the working group. And I suppose the question, which I'm just throwing out there for when we get to this, is whether the working group should decide which are the ICANN critical communications and which aren't, or whether that should be flagged as an implementation issue. In other words, that there should be a requirement to relay all ICANN critical communications. Here are some examples, and a full list or a full implementation. That's an implementation question. That's my point on my question on the first section here. Is do you guys agree with that approach? And then I have a question about the second section. Should I go on to my second question?
Well, James, is that a response or to the first, or should we just go on to both?
Yeah, I was just going to offer a potential response to Steve that I think it's completely within, appropriate and within the scope of this work to define the minimum types or categories of communications that would be considered ICANN critical or registrar critical that would need to be relayed. And then, of course, allowing for the possibility that service providers may want to expand upon that. But I think that, it would certainly fit the idea of setting those standardized industry practices for all accredited providers, that we would establish some minimum subset and then just build up from there.
Okay, thank you.
That's just my opinion.
That response. I guess on the second section, are you recommending that we, if these issues need to be addressed in the context of this working group, maybe we should have a sub-team that will work in more detail on especially the things on the right-hand side, B and D, and then report back. Is that what you guys are recommending, or have I misread this? You say the working group / sub-team should consider scenarios, and I think this is definitely, if we do take this on, it's a sub-team job, because I think most of us on the working group don't have enough expertise to contribute anything here. But was that the recommendation that you guys were making, that we establish a sub-team and ask it to look in more detail at these issues?
This is James again for a response. I think that we were saying if the working group as a whole wants to pursue this as part of its work, then we are, yes, recommending that a separate sub-team that comprises some folks who have some experience and expertise with IRTP policy peel off from this group and tackle this and then report back. I think that it's still an open question whether the working group as a whole wants to take this on. I think that there was some talk previously about kicking this over to the IRTPD working group, and I just note that I'm the chair of that working group, and we are very nearing the end of our final report, so I don't know that even contextually or even from a timing perspective that the IRTP working group can take this issue on, and I think it's more appropriately done here if we want to go down this path.
And if I might add, this is Kathy. Steve, in light of the interest and the concern that a number of that we seem to have both across the non-commercial and commercial among people coming in from the non-commercial and commercial sides, I remember Paul McGrady was concerned and others, that there was this disclosure happening in the transfer that many of us as registrants didn't know about, that, again, kind of plugging the hole, the small sub-team working on a focused issue, might be a good idea, and I'm definitely in favor of recommending it, but that wasn't the purpose of the sub-team. James and I were trying to define it, but I would like to recommend that it be an area we work on, just so that if it can easily be plugged, people aren't surprised by what happens. Registrants aren't surprised that they have as much information as possible and as much kind of informed consent. So that if it is possible to do a transfer from one registrar to another, from one proxy privacy service provider to another, this is probably a really good time to figure that out. Thanks.
Yeah.
James?
I just, thanks, James speaking, and I just wanted to mention I also agree that this is probably something that we should address. I think that one possibility, one possible market outcome of this this entire effort is that registrars will support accredited privacy services with which they're not affiliated, and that currently is not happening today. So I think that preparing for that reality and preparing some guidelines without, you know, as I mentioned to Kathy while we were doing this, I want to be careful that we don't cross the line into developing products as part of a working group, but I think setting some predictable uniform standards of how these transfers would occur between privacy proxy services, I think, is a worthwhile effort, so long as we don't dive too deeply into the details.
Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve again. Thank you. Thanks for clarifying that. Could I suggest if Kathy and James are willing to serve as the nucleus of this subgroup, and if there's, I mean, obviously if there's support for doing it amongst the rest of the group, I'm certainly comfortable with giving them the charter to come back with some recommendations if they could develop any that should go into the accreditation standards on this, if they can identify those, and I think that will take a little time on their part, but I'd certainly welcome that if they, just speaking personally, I'd welcome that if they are in a position to take on that job.
The sound of people being volunteered. Well, let me ask this, and first I've got to apologize here if you're hearing delays, if that phrase even means. I'm getting my audio problems are that it seems like things are delayed coming through to me. So sentences are broken, I get them all, but with a few second gap. So just a clinging place. Let me just ask quickly, and then I'll jump over to Tim. You mentioned that board is, do you think we'll be able to pull from it? I mean, what's the time frame, for example, given the fact that we won't be getting to these issues for a while? Or should we not wait? Just go ahead and do some kind of sub-team? Let me jump to Tim, and then I'll let James answer.
Okay, good, because I wasn't prepared to answer that question. But I actually have a question. Are we talking – this is Tim Ruiz, by the way. Are we talking about just notices in regards to the transfers, or does this notices in general because I think there might be some that, you know, yep, we're going to discuss. Say hello, can you hear me?
No.
We now,
yes.
You dropped out there.
You yep. dropped.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
You'd already.
Let me give it a shot. This is Kathy, and maybe James can chime in. I think there were,
There
was certain requirements of notices to the registrant, if I remember correctly, to the registrant of the domain name regarding renewal, and there was some ambiguity as to the proxy privacy customer, whether the proxy privacy service provider could reply to that or not reply to it directly because they're listed as the registrant in the proxy service, or whether, and some concern whether all of those messages might be being passed or being blocked to the customer themselves, who's really the one who should decide whether to renew the domain name or not. So I think this is about kind of making sure that chain of communication on something as critical as a renewal made it all the way down to the proxy privacy customer. That's the type of really high-level and important communication that we're talking about. Does that answer your question?
Can't hear you if you're speaking, Tim. Oh, you're typing. And we may have lost Dawn there, too.
Alas. We've lost the chat.
I didn't. This is Tim. If somebody was answering my question or talking, I didn't hear anything.
Oh, we can hear you now, though, Tim.
Tim, you didn't. This is Kathy. You didn't hear my response on that?
No.
Okay, let me just double-check my sanity here. Did anyone else hear my response on that?
Yes.
I heard you, Kat.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thanks. Tim, let me try it again. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Which is that at one point there seemed to be an ambiguity in the transfer rules, and James should correct me if I'm not getting this right, which is what kind of led, one of the things that led to the subteam. And the ambiguity was that the registrant that there appeared to be a rule in the transfer requirements and also in some other types of requirements, the registrant of the domain name had to respond. And it wasn't clear in a proxy privacy situation, particularly a proxy situation, whether that communication had to be relayed to the actual customer. And that under certain circumstances, it seemed to make sense that it not be the registrant of the domain name, because that's listed as the proxy, but the actual customer that should have the notice and be able to respond. And so it was about taking those very specific communications and making sure that they were forwarded all the way through to the end customer. Which we view as a fairly minor tweak.
Because in the discussion we had, it sounded like I was getting confused because in one side it seemed as if we were just talking about those kinds of transfer notices you just described, or if we were talking about all notices, ICANN critical notices, that could be much broader than just in regards to transfers. So thanks.
I don't know if Don is back or this is James. I don't know if I can jump in.
Go for it, James.
James, thank you.
Okay, Graham is taking over. Tim, I think that the thing that Kathy and I uncovered is that in transfers, the FOA is a special case in that that is an ICANN critical piece of communication that's defined by consensus policy, but the contact is unknown or could be unknown to the gaining registrar or their privacy service. And so I think that was something that, you know, we're kind of teeing up for the subgroup is there a secure way to exchange or to ensure that those communications are delivered, if the gaining privacy service or gaining registrar is kind of firing blindly with a critical piece of communication. So I think that's kind of the paradox that we're looking to unravel here. And maybe the result is that there's no secure way to do it, and we just have to go with the status quo, which is that privacy-protected domain names can't be transferred until that service is canceled. And that may be one possible outcome of this, but I think that what we were trying to put some boundaries around is the idea that if you have something that's critical and you're not sure who to deliver it to, how can you at least get that to a trusted delegate that will be then required to pass that through?
Thanks, James. Tim, did you have a follow-up? Going with no. Holly?
I'm still a little confused, but I'll save it. Thanks.
Yeah, I have a question, and it's maybe of Kathy and James. I'm sort of envisaging every process is almost a two-stage process, and the final stage in communication is between the privacy server and the customer, and then isn't the issue passing that information over or back in situations where that particular information still needs to be protected. Is that the sort of the nub of the problem? Seems to me.
James?
Hi, so Holly, I'm not 100% clear that I understood.
Okay, I'm assuming that the registrar would essentially handle all sort of outward communication, and that the only person, the only entity that's communicating with the, let's call it the beneficial registrant, rather than the registrant that is there as the name to be contacted. I'm assuming that last loop, if you will, of communication is what we're talking about, and the difficulty is handing that last loop, which is the loop that means that somebody is hidden from everybody but the person with whom, or the organization, they have a special relationship, and that's the difficulty in terms of transfer. How do you transfer that information so that it only goes to the registrar, but the anonymity is protected? Am I understanding that that's the critical issue in the transfer process?
I believe that is correct. You have captured that. Yes, I believe that's correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, Holly, this is Kathy. That's definitely the critical issue in number two. But there may be variations of that. That information may not actually have to be passed. James has some great ideas about hashtags and other types of things. There may be ways, because the registrant, let's call it the beneficial registrant, the customer, yeah, the proxy privacy customer, is going to have to open an account with the other registrar and with their affiliated or accredited proxy privacy service provider. So they'll be independently providing the information on the receiving side. So the only question is it the actual customer who's authorizing the transfer? And there are actually numerous ways to do that, including different kinds of codes. And it was not a problem for us to solve, but I'm just raising the point that there may be many, many ways to actually verify the identity, without verifying the identity, but verify that the customer is actually approved of the transfer.
Thanks, Kathy. It's Holly. And it sounds as if there's going to be some interesting work coming out of the working group, and as if you've already started.
Does that mean you're volunteering?
Well, with the two of you expert, I mean.
No, come on. Come
all
on
right,
board and
okay.
Help us.
Okay.
Great, thanks.
Okay. It's just a really interesting problem, and I don't know the technology.
Yeah. Am I coming through here?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, why don't we go through the queue, assuming I'm reading James and Steve and Lyndon. We've got a lot of time to look at these issues. I think there'll be a lot of work to do, even just going back to the transcript and digesting issues. I guess James dropped out. Why don't we finish off with Steve, and then let's get over to the template issues.
Yeah,
Steve?
This is Steve. Just to sum up, so we will form this subgroup. James and Kathy will be the co-conveners. We will solicit on the list or now in the chat for further members, and we will ask them to look at these issues in number two of this paper and report back. I think that's a good outcome. Thank you.
And it couldn't have happened if I hadn't been here guiding every step of the conversation. Mary, if you could bring up D. Whichever it was.
Don, that would be, this is Mary, that would be D2, I think, and it's on the screen now.
D2, yeah.
Okay.
Right. Could you scroll down to the inclusion?
I think we can do that on our own screens, right?
Yes, we have unsynced the documents so everyone can.
So that's call. Well. Okay, while we're doing that, I think we had basically a question about whether there should be. What was that?
Don,
I heard a couple other voices come through there. I'm sorry, Graham, could you just pick this up? I'm getting people talking all over each other who I really don't think are.
Yeah, that's interesting, Don. I don't think anyone else is talking at the moment, or at least not
no.
what I'm hearing. Interesting. So you might want to try dialing back in, Don.
Pardon? Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to work. But yeah, let me try something else here, if you could pick it up again.
Sure. So I think we're just seeming to be going through our deliberations on... Sorry, this is Graham Bunton for the record. Our deliberations on D2. And it looks like Steve wants to talk, so let's go ahead with Steve. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think there was general agreement that there should be some dedicated abuse point of contact, and that one model would be 318 of the RAA. 2013 RAA. There really are two. I would encourage people to look at that. There are three paragraphs there. One is maintaining an abuse contact to receive reports of abuse involving registered names, and then the registrar has to take reasonable and prompt steps to investigate and respond appropriately. So it's fairly general. Second paragraph is 24/7 dedicated abuse point of contact, which is basically for use by law enforcement, consumer protection, quasi-governmental, or other similar authorities in the jurisdiction in which the registrar is established. And there's some time limits that well-founded reports have to be reviewed within 24 hours. And then the third point is to publish a description of its procedures for the receipt, handling, and tracking of abuse reports and documenting that and retaining those reports for a certain period of time. So that's kind of the model that's in use for registrars. It may be a useful model to follow here, but I will just make the point that I've made before that if there is a problem involving a proxy registration, then the time for contacting the customer or the actual registrant or whatever you want to call that person is inevitably going to be longer than it would be if that was not a proxy yeah. registration, where then you would have who is data about the registrant available. So I think we should consider, and I'll just, you know, I think we've talked about this in other contexts, but I think because there is that built-in delay, we should consider having perhaps more specific requirements for responding to abuse contact reports from well-founded abuse contact reports from any source than appear better, more stringent than appears, for example, in 318.1. So, and this is the essence of the IPC provisional position that's set out in this document, which is we should look at 318.2 as a model with some time limits for responses. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Kathy, did you have a response?
Thanks. Thanks, Graham. I'm sorry for the cold back here.
I don't think there's any question about the first and third points that Steve was asking about, the point of contact and the publication of procedures. But this idea of a 24/7 contact was something that the NCSG in its comments said we wanted to ask the registrars and those who operate the group that will become the accredited proxy privacy services, because is it feasible? Are we in some way ruling out smaller proxy privacy service providers if we have to go to a 24/7 model? And let me raise the opposite question from what Steve raised, which is, do we need it? In light of the fact that there's now, for technical problems on the net, a 24/7 contact at the registrars, do we need that type of complete responsiveness in the proxy privacy service arena? If you can take it down, if you can suspend the domain name quickly, do you need that immediacy in finding out who's behind it, or is that a process that can take a little longer, have a little more due process involved in it? It's probably, there are going to be a lot more inquiries probably coming in for proxy privacy services to the providers, because we're looking at content now. There are a lot of people who are going to want to know what's behind the content, and that's going to take time to evaluate. But does it have that same immediacy, especially if under the RAA, the 2013 RAA, we can take down that domain name much more quickly or suspend it? Thanks.
Yes, Kathy, those are good questions. Michele?
Yeah, Michele for the record. Just before I go on to what I was going to say, Kathy's thing about the abuse 24/7, that's only for law enforcement. It's not for the general public. So I think she's mixing up a couple of things, which is understandable because it is a bit complicated. To Steve's point, I'm a bit confused here. I mean, I don't understand why there's this kind of assumption that privacy proxy is going to be much harder to contact or get than non-privacy proxy, for the simple reason that even if all the data is publicly available in Whois, I mean, that just means you see the data. There's no obligation on a registrant to respond to you. I mean, absolutely none whatsoever. And in many respects, you're probably more likely to get a response under the 2013 contract from the privacy proxy provider than you would do from a direct registrant. So I'm just finding the logic behind this argument to be a little bit lacking. I mean, I just don't see how it works. I mean, if you have a quote-unquote emergency, then surely wouldn't you be going after the hosting provider in order to get the quote-unquote, let's just say, infringing content taken down? I mean, I think I'm saying something similar to what Kathy's saying, but I'm taking it probably from a slightly different angle. I'm just a little bit confused as to why, you know, you feel this overwhelming desire and urge to get a contact point when, if you can actually get a privacy proxy provider to respond to an abuse complaint, that actually solves a lot of your problems. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Steve is pointing out in the chat that the issue is contactability, not necessarily response. People haven't seen that.
Yeah, but why? But if that's the case, why does it have to be dealt with so quickly? That's what I'm confused about.
Let's get Steve to respond, and then we'll get to you, James. Steve?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Michele, I think you raise a good point, and if it were the case that we would get a faster response, or we could be confident of getting a faster response from the proxy service, that might be more useful in some cases than having contact information in the clear that might not produce a response. So, but that's kind of my point, because the language in paragraph 1 of 318 of the RAA just says reasonable and prompt steps, whereas 318.2 says, well, we're going to review it within 24 hours and take appropriate action. So that's a more specific requirement, and I'm wondering whether we can use some of that language rather than just say reasonable and prompt in this area, and if there is a and if in order to be accredited, you have to respond within a certain time period to these abuse reports. I think that's what I'm hoping to get. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Just real quick, I'm on landline now, although the cord doesn't reach all the way to the computer. So this is really ugly.
Welcome back, Don. We're still mulling around on D2, and I think James is about to respond to Steve.
Well, not really. This is James speaking. Not really responding to Steve necessarily, but just sort of reacting to some of the statements from McKelly and Kathy, and I think similar, but with some key differences. Just an acknowledgement that what McKelly is saying, I believe to be correct, that an accredited and professional privacy service is probably going to be a more reliable point of contact than just a registrant. Just because, you know, that is, they'll probably have procedures and they'll probably have staff, you know, set up to monitor those requirements or those inquiries, whereas an at-large registrant might not even answer that particular inbox once a week or something like that. I just want to point out, however, something that is occurring to me is when we look at the second paragraph under 318, the dedicated contact for law enforcement with very specific requirements for response. I'm going to go ahead and say I don't agree with the idea that should be included with the privacy proxy service. Just because a domain name is uses a privacy service does not alleviate or remove the registrar's obligation under 3.18.2. So in my opinion, you know, the registrar is still going to be the primary point of contact for law enforcement, regardless of whether or not a privacy service is used. And as a registrar, I would be very concerned about having my obligations under this part of the RAA in the hands of an intermediary privacy service that I may or may not be affiliated with, and then, you know, basically abdicating that responsibility to someone else to respond to law enforcement inquiries. I'd rather not confuse that channel and just essentially keep the law enforcement and the, you know, the strict responsiveness requirements at the registrar level and not duplicate that at the privacy service level. And then finally, just noting that, I would caution against, because of some of the problems we're seeing with the abuse provisions in the 2013 RAA, what we're noting is that as soon as we establish a contact channel, and then we put time frames around it, it is filling up very quickly with spurious, and let's just say, you know, garbage type complaints. Registrars that have communicated back to ICANN that, you know, those inboxes are filling up with, you know, I don't like your TV commercial, or I need a job, or all kinds of other things that people are, the signal to noise ratio in those abuse channels just skyrockets as soon as those go into effect. So I would strongly caution that we keep the channel modeled after 3.18.1, where we say things like reasonable and commercial, commercially practical response times, and leave 3.18.2 at the registrar level, not the privacy proxy level. Thank you.
Thanks, James. That's an interesting point, and from my own sort of registrar perspective, you want to keep that contact at the registrar level and sort of diluting that by having sort of dedicated law enforcement around a number of different privacy services that may be contracting with one registrar presents some problems. McKaylee?
Yeah, thanks. I'm just kind of going back again to, you know, some of the stuff around abuse. Now, I'm looking at a 8 pages of legal threats here from a particular law firm in Dublin who shall remain nameless. And this is the kind of typical rubbish that lands on my desk on a regular basis. And this is the kind of thing where they are claiming that their client has been defamed, that their client has been abused, that the DNS has been used for all sorts of abusive things, when in reality it really hasn't. But they're just using scare tactics. And the problem I have is, you see, when you start talking about abuse, and I think the term somebody used was well-founded abuse report, we need to be really, really careful. I mean, what is a well-founded abuse report? I mean, is a claim of defamation a well-founded abuse report? Where defamation on in certain jurisdictions, it works in such that if somebody claims that you have defamed, it's up to you to prove that you haven't, as opposed to other jurisdictions where you have to actually prove that defamation happened. It's something to be very, very careful about. I mean, ultimately, a lot of us are not interested in having our services abused for criminal activity, illegal activity, call it what you may. But I'm very, very wary of allowing the usage of terms that are far too broad and can be abused in themselves. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Steve, I can see you're still typing there. Do you want to say that instead of write it?
Oh no, I was just going to say that well-founded reports of illegal activity. That's language taken from the RAA 318.2. So I'm not concocting that language.
Mary, we'll get to you in a sec. But Steve, if I can put you on the spot, did what James was saying about the having that dedicated contact at both the proxy and level and the registrar level resonate with you at all?
Yeah, it does. But remember, this is and it's certainly what there are going to be circumstances where it will be unnecessary to deal with a privacy proxy service provider abuse point of contact. But there are going to be situations. I mean, the model that we're looking at here is that there will be privacy proxy services not affiliated with a registrar that will be registering, making registration sponsored by that registrar. So going to the registrar with a problem may not be that productive. You may really need to go to the privacy and proxy service to try to resolve the problem. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. James will get to you in a sec. Mary's had her hand up for a bit. Mary?
No, it's okay, Graham. I'll get back in line behind James.
Okay, thanks. James?
Thanks, Graham. And to Steve's point, that's exactly the scenario that I'm concerned about from a registrar perspective, is that there would be an unaffiliated privacy or proxy service doing something abusive, and that I would get a contact from law enforcement that said essentially, you know, I've already raised this issue with the privacy service, and since they're not responding, I'm bringing it to you. And by the way, you're already outside of your required response window, and you know, and so now you're in breach of section 3.18.2. And I think that you know, it really says that if you go to the registrar, every domain name has a registrar, and if you go to the registrar with that report from law enforcement, they will take action with or without the cooperation of the privacy service. I think the key here is what we want that action to be. If we want to contact that person or find out who that person is, then the registrar may not be able to help you in that situation. But if it's illegal, and I think that's what we're talking about for Section 3.18.2, if it's illegal, then we want it taken down. And that, I think, is where the registrar is, in fact, a more appropriate more appropriately positioned to take action against the name. So I think, maybe we've got to break down the types of, contacts we feel like would be fielded by this channel, because some, if we're just looking to find out who's behind it, that's something the registrar may not be able to provide. But if we're looking for someone to take action, then I think the registrar is more appropriate.
Thanks, James. I'm going to let Steve respond again, Mary. Thank you. Go ahead,
just
Steve.
Briefly, that may be the case, but sometimes you need both. You need it taken down, and you need to know who is behind it. Because otherwise, there's a name for what you're describing, and it's called whack-a-mole. the same thing pops up again and again and again. It's taken down. It moves to another registrar, another registry. The same problem is recurring. So at some point, you may need to know who is behind that. I agree with you that in many cases, the registrar will be better able. These two aren't mutually exclusive, but there should be an abuse point of contact that at the service provider level also. And my view is there should be some time limits in there on response. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. That's some interesting discussion that I don't feel like we've quite wrapped up, so maybe we'll see some more of that on the list. Mary?
Thanks, Graham, and thanks, everybody. It's an interesting discussion. So this is just kind of to remind us of, and mostly staff, of where we are. It seems that we're still looking at the distinction between contactability on the one hand and responsiveness, which obviously follows from contactability. And it seems to me in listening to this that we don't necessarily have any sense of where the majority of the group may be with regard to even the first point of contactability, which is, is there a point of contact? Is that enough, or should there be a dedicated point of contact? We've heard some arguments and that shows why a dedicated point of contact may be less workable. And that may or may not then have an impact on the group's answer to the point about responsiveness. So you could have, for example, a dedicated point of contact with fixed time limits as we have in 318. You could also have a non-dedicated point of contact, simply a point of contact where the responsiveness required is more or higher than what's in 318. In 318, if it's a non-dedicated point of contact, it is the reasonable and prompt standard. So I'm just wondering if members of the group feel that there is any sense as to whether just on contactability alone, there's a tendency to require a dedicated versus a non-dedicated, and to if that has an impact on the responsiveness question, which obviously we also haven't quite determined. Did I put everyone to sleep with my comment?
It looks like maybe you did. Bravo. Uh-huh. So maybe that's something we should put to the list and make explicit for everybody as we're thinking about these issues going forward.
Right, and Graham, Don, Steve, I can write some of these up as a series of short questions to send to the list to further discussion on these points.
That would be appreciated. Thank you, Mary. I don't think I'm not seeing anybody else in the queue. Although I feel like there's probably still a bit more discussion to have on this D2. But perhaps we can sort of kick... Oh. Sorry.
Graham?
Yep.
Hi, it's Don. I kind of deliberately hung back here because I wasn't quite sure where we were, and this hotel phone system is only slightly better than what I was dealing with before. And I just want to toss out, I think the issue of contacts, responsiveness are kind of interwoven with what we're talking about here. So if we do the series of questions that I think I heard Mary mention, I only caught part of it, I think it would be worthwhile to do kind of a combined list, because certainly the dedicated points feeds back into just posting contacts. And I don't know, I'm really not sure because I didn't hear the whole discussion, but the extent to which require the requirements under 3.18 feed back into the issues of just what is responsiveness. This may have been redundant, but I'm just mentioning it from little bits I picked up.
Thanks, Don. I see us at 10:58, so perhaps it's time to wrap it up rather than try and squeeze 2 minutes out of D3. Do we have anything else we need to cover before the end of the call?
Graham, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. So I guess we'll post those questions as a follow-up to D2 and a reminder also that for anyone who is interested in joining the sub-team on the transfer issues, we'll probably post a note on that as well.
Both of those would be appreciated. Okay. Thanks for the really good discussion today, everybody. I thought that was informative. And let's see if we can take a bit of that to the list and maybe clear up any lingering issues on D2 so that we can move on to D3 next week.
Okay.
There we go. Thanks, everyone,
Thank
for coming.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks.
We can stop the recording now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Andrea, if you could please stop the recordings. As a reminder, that does conclude today's conference call. Please disconnect all remaining lines, and thank you for joining.